So welcome everybody to this meditation class, the coolest place to be in Perth today, where you really learn how to chill out and make your mind very, very peaceful. I think it's one of the reasons there's not so many people here this afternoon, too many namby-pamby cream puffs, or maybe the cream puffs have all melted on the way here. So welcome anyway to our meditation session here. And I have to make the announcements every week. For those who are learning meditation for the first time, please understand that the beginner's course to learn meditation for the first time is in the room to my right. And this is the ongoing class of meditation for those who want to take the meditation further. They've already learned how to sit reasonably quiet. They just want to take it that degree deeper. And it's apt to know how to deal with all the different temperatures which you have to deal with in life. And please remember that the mind can have an enormous effect on one's resilience and tolerance to whatever's going on outside. If it's cold outside, I remember just growing up in the UK where sometimes it's incredibly cold, and you could just learn how to just focus inside. And the feelings on the outside of the body would just vanish and disappear. They wouldn't disturb you anymore. And then going to places like Thailand, which got very hot, and then being able to again just push away the thoughts of hot and cold, and then again just go inside where you couldn't really feel the body, whether it's hot, whether it's cold. What this really is learning how to deal with distractions in one's meditation. And it's a general principle that what you worry about, what you think about, takes center stage in the field of your perception. The whole idea of like your perception being like a field, like a screen. And what's really important to you is in the center, and everything else is on the edge, on the outside. And this is one of the reasons why that if we obsess about something like the noise of a little kid crying, or you know, somebody outside deciding to use a chainsaw, or the heat or the cold or an ache or a pain in the body, if we think that's really, really important, it does take center place in the screen that is our field of attention. And whatever is in the center will stay there. What's on the edges falls off. So last night when I was a kid making a bit of noise in a Friday evening meditation, I remember just the metaphor of, you know, just being in a bubble. I was in my bubble, which was nice and quiet and silent, and on the outside of that bubble, that was where the sound was, but it wasn't in the middle, it wasn't in the center. And it's the same using a screen metaphor. The noise of the kid or the noise of somebody playing basketball outside, that was on the edge of the screen. It was to the left, to the right, anywhere but in the center. And what happens is what is in the center remains. What is on the edges falls away. It disappears by itself. And if you want to know exactly how that works or prove to yourself it does work, again, tonight maybe when you watch a TV, please be aware, when you first turn on that TV, you can see the edges of the screen and you can see what's beyond the screen of the TV when you first turn it on. But after a few seconds, you find you can't even be aware of the edges of the screen. Your awareness is totally inside the center of the screen. And you don't know whether that TV set is round or oblong or what it is. So when you notice that event, that phenomena, of whatever you look at, when you first look at it, you have a wide attention, and after a while, the mind just focuses in, and what's on the edges vanishes. That is one of the best ways of overcoming obstacles in meditation, such as noise from outside, such as heat or cold outside, such as noises outside, even thoughts. If you have an obsessive thought, you know, while you're meditating, please, for goodness sake, don't give it importance. Don't think this is a problem, this is a difficulty, because if you give it importance, it's right in the center. So it's a noise out there, it's just a thought, it's over here somewhere, but I'm just watching the present moment, or I'm watching the breath, whatever you're watching. But the disturbance, you're aware of it, you know it's happening, but it's to the right or to the left, above, below, it's not in the center of your field of attention. So if you can get that metaphor sort of established, the metaphor of the TV screen, that what's on the edges or beyond the edges soon disappears, then you know how to deal with such distractions. So, now fortunately we've got an aircon here now, so it's a bit cool, but whatever you are, there's always places, it's too cold or it's too hot, it's too noisy, you know, my body's a bit too tired or it's too much energy, whatever is the problem here. Remember, just keep that on the edge. That's why sometimes we say center in on something like the breathing or the present moment. Because if that's in the very center, all those other things are on the edge. And after a while you don't notice them. It's the same as if you're at work. You're focusing on some letter you have to write. And you're looking at that monitor on your computer. And after a while, everything else in the office, you just don't hear it because you're centering in. It's the nature of the mind to block out everything else except just what you're really focusing on. And that ability to focus on something means you're not worried about it. You don't give attention or value to the obstacles. The obstacles disappear by themselves. You just put the attention on the thing you want to persist in your field of attention. So just like, you know, you're watching, say, the present moment, the old present moment awareness. Yeah, there may be memories of the past or the future come in, but they don't take center stage. You know, they're not central on your screen. Yeah, you can have a thought about the past, but it's like they're over to the left or the right. They're not in the middle. Now, the present moment is in the middle. These other things are on the edge. And that way, the past and the future, they just vanish by themselves. We have this saying in English now, it just falls off the radar screen. It means it's not central anymore, you're not focused on it anymore. Then it vanishes. So the mistake people make in meditation, whenever there is an obstacle to, you know, the object of meditation, whenever there's an ache, a pain, whenever there's, you know, the body is swaying or something going on, that problem becomes the center of the screen and everything else disappears. I have a thought of the past or a thought of the future or a fantasy that takes the center of the screen of attention. Everything else falls off and that's the only thing which is left. That train of thought or the memory from the past or that feeling in the body, that's all that's left. And then you've lost the meditation. So please remember the screen simile. What's in the center is what will stay. What's on the edges will vanish by themselves. So you don't try and get rid of anything. You don't try and hold on to anything. You just work with your perception. Change the perception to keep, you know, the meditation objects, whether it's present moment awareness, whether it's, you know, the breath, always keep that in the center of the field of attention. You don't need to get rid of anything. You don't need to hold anything. Just need to imagine the breath in the center and everything else on the edge. And even thoughts vanish that way. Keep silence in the center. And the thoughts are on the edges, like the moon orbiting the earth. But they never actually land into the earth. Now the earth center is without the moon. Your mind is without the thoughts. The thoughts are orbiting around it, but never get into it. Then you'll find after a while, focusing on the earth, you can't see the moon anymore. This is like what happens. And it's a very brilliant, very effective way of allowing obstacles to disappear. Whether that's heat, whether that's cold, thoughts, sounds outside, don't bring them into the center of your field of attention. Okay, so that's a little bit of instructions for today's meditation. And again, once more, because a few people have come in, those people are coming here for the first or second time and feel that We're going to do about 45, 50 minutes meditation. If you feel that's a bit too much, then please, next door we have excellent teacher, James, an ex-president, very good man, and he's teaching the introduction to meditation class for those of you who want to learn slowly. Please never jump in too fast to anything like meditation, because sometimes if you don't go gradually into meditation, it may be too hard. You may think, oh, I can't meditate. It means you don't come back again. Okay, so no one's leaving, so I'm sure you're all experts at meditating now. So now we can begin today's class. So if you'd like to get yourselves in your meditation posture, which is on the floor, on the chair, leaning against the back somewhere, or the side, that's fine, as long as your body can be nice and comfy. And there should be plenty of cushions around if you need a cushion. And those little stools in the back there, you see the Zen stools, they're also really comfortable to meditate on. Actually, no one's using. Oh yeah, using one over in the back over there. They're very, very nice to meditate on. For those of you who have difficulty sitting on the floor or sitting on the ground, sitting on a chair, that's halfway between the chair and the ground and very, very comfortable. You can sit for long periods of time without having any pains on your knees or on your bottom. Okay, so let's begin. As usual, close eyes. One of the ways of looking at meditation is shutting down the five senses. So the sixth sense, the mind, can become prominent and can become the dominant of the senses. So we try and restrict all the sensory impact. And one of the ways of doing that is just closing the eyes. One less sense to be concerned about. But it also means you become more sensitive to things like feelings in the body. There's more space in the brain to know feelings in your body when they're not taken up by processing sight. So you do actually become more mindful of bodily feelings. And that's when you can become aware of such things. I've got my belt tightened a bit too tightly. I'm going to loosen it. If your legs aren't properly positioned, move them. If your bottom is not comfortable on the chair, fidget it. We do these adjustments. These are quite coarse adjustments. Finer adjustments will come later. If you're going to sit for over half an hour, you have to look after your body at the beginning. 5 minutes of body awareness is an investment for the rest of the time in meditation. It means you're not so disturbed by physical aches and pains. Keep your awareness on the body. Are there any tight places in the body or places of pressure? See if you can relieve the tightness by imagining a string or a rope being pulled on either end by two invisible monsters in your body somewhere. And they're causing this part of the body to be tight, to be pulled, to be stretched. Imagine those two little imps or monsters inside your body letting go. So the tendon or the muscle or the blood vessel just relaxes. If there's a tight knot of pain in your body, imagine it expanding. That loosens the pressure. If there's any ache because of some sickness there, just imagine you are caressing it with kindness in whatever way you can imagine that. The mindfulness allows you to have feedback. You can experience directly how those physical feelings change. By that method, you learn. You learn how to relax your body. You learn what makes those feelings become softer, more free, more comfortable, more relaxed. So develop the awareness of your body and learn how to relax it. And that is such an incredible benefit for your health and also your ability to meditate deeply. It's hard, it's not impossible, but it's hard to relax the body. So we relax the mind. It's hard to relax the mind if the body's not relaxed. And when you think that you have relaxed the body as much as you can, just deliberately let it go. Just imagine that you are walking away from your car or from your home, which is well locked with a security system on. So you can leave it alone without worrying. If during the meditation you need to adjust your body or scratch it, you're allowed to. It's a disturbance, but it's not a big one. And now we learn how to relax our mind. First of all, the center of the mind should be the present moment, just now. All the past, deliberately, all the past, let it go. All the future, not the time to be concerned about. Present moment becomes the center of your field of attention. You may still have some perceptions of the past or plans for the future, but they're not in the center of your field of attention. You'll find by that way the past and the future will just vanish. You're not trying to get rid of them. You are just putting the center with the present moment, just now. And it is important to be kind to the present moment, just the way you are kind to your body. The feeling, the quality of the present moment gets more comfortable, less painful, as you stay with it and relax it. One of the reasons why people lose the present moment, they go off into the past or the future or think, fantasize, is because at first the present moment isn't comfortable enough. It doesn't draw the attention in. It's unpleasant sometimes. But just persist with keeping the present moment in the center of your field of attention, giving it priority. Center, most important. getting very close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? Did this green simile work for you? Putting what's most important in the center so everything else vanishes. What does it feel like to have a peaceful mind? Please enjoy for 1 minute the feeling of peace. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. Please listen to every sound from the gong. When the third ringing vanishes, then come out from your meditation. Now's the time for a few questions on meditation. And as the sign says outside, if anyone has any questions on meditation, you can always put them on the piece of paper if you don't feel like asking them directly. And in the meantime, we have some questions from... Where's she gone? From overseas. Any questions here about the meditation today? Here we go. Because this is all, it's a popular class and so it's looked at throughout the world. Wow. Ogus. Where's Ogus? Question now from Ogus, I don't know where he's from. How meditation can make my life more colourful? Cure my material attachments of greed, hatred, delusion. Thank you. That's a big question there. Because number one, when you give yourself a bit of peace and quiet, you can rest your brain, which means afterwards your brain has just more energy, more life to it. Especially if you learn how to get into some nice meditation, your awareness becomes stronger. You can stay in the present moment more and you can enjoy life. And if you want to know how it becomes more colorful, the old story, for those of you who haven't heard this one before, where I live in Serpentine is 2 and a bit kilometers on the top of a hill. For many years, 7 years or 8 years I think it was, I've been up and down that hill in a car. And for the first time in such a long time, I asked the driver who's taking me back one day to let me off at the bottom of the hill. I was going to walk up that hill. First time. And when I started walking up the hill, it was amazing. I could not recognize my surroundings. I stopped, and then when I stopped and stared, that hillside where I'd lived looked totally different than anything I'd ever seen before. And it was beautiful, and the colors were rich. And it was such an amazing experience. And I thought that somebody would put some mushrooms in my breakfast, which, you know, were not the right type, or something was going on. But it became quite obvious what happened. After a bit of reflection, I use that as a simile, how meditation makes your life more colorful. And what was happening is that your eyes, it's a chemical reaction of the light on the back of the eye, on the retina. If you are looking through the window of a speeding car, then one image comes up, it's not fully formed. before another image comes up, dislodges the first, another image comes up. There's so many images come up so fast, one after the other, when you're in a car, none of them fully form. When I got out of the car and walked, they were still coming fast, but much slower, which means they had more time to form. The colors were richer, the detail was established. But nothing beat standing perfectly still and just looking. And then you can imagine all that light coming into the eye, a picture fully formed, it had the time to fully form, and the colors were very rich, and I could see so much more. And that became the simile for how meditation makes you appreciate life much more. The colors of life are richer. The tastes of food are more delicious. Even the feelings in the body, you can actually feel, you're sensitive, because you're giving your sensory apparatus more time to fully form, and your mind has more opportunity, more time to explore it. It's just learning how to slow down, oh goods, makes your mind life more colorful. And it gives you so much joy and happiness. You don't need all these other material things to try and make you happy. Now, there's the only reason why people go out in the world to get material things to make them happy is because they don't know how to find the happiness inside. So the more happiness you have, contentment, well-being inside, you don't need so much on the outside. Remember, all most people's material is just distractions. Just have something to hope for, to pay off the loan, to go to the holiday, all these things which are just an escape from being in the present moment. But when you learn how to meditate and you find the beauty of the present moment, then you don't need so much stuff. That's why you're a monk. Anyway, Stefano from Italy. In your book on meditation, you say consciousness is not a continuous process. Rather, it is made up of discrete events, like grains of sand, with mind consciousness alternating with sense consciousness. Are there any suttas on this? It certainly, the Abhidharma says that. Now, I'm not very keen on the Abhidharma, simply because it came after the time of the Buddha. But it's still very, very clear, the idea of moments of consciousness. But if you look at more in the Nidana Sutta, so in the Nidana Sanyutta, if you look through that, that's the Sanyutta Nikaya, where they go into detail on the dependent origination. That cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect idea in Buddhism. That will give you some idea of what the Buddha meant, that these are events rather than a continuous process. So it's the Sutta Sanyutta Nikaya, Nidana Sanyutta, that would be the place to have a look. And it's just modern psychology, or people know that it takes time for an image to form on the back of an eye. You don't have a sound. It's an event. It's an electrical signal which happens in the brain, which is what, and then the consciousness can be aware of, while the mind can be aware of. You can't just have just a momentary. There's a time limit. Even they had this experiments in psychology. Just how short, say, an image is before you can really perceive it. They had this experiment done in Harvard University. They had all the students in a theater, and they flashed an image on the screen. Now, very, very short exposure, and they had a piece of paper. What was that? I haven't got a clue. You couldn't know it because the exposure was too short. And they increased the exposure, and increased the exposure, and increased the exposure, I forget what the time was, a quarter of a second, or half a second, or something, or a second. And only when it got to that level could you know what you were seeing. And that shows, you can't have a continuous idea of even seeing. It takes time to see. It takes time to hear. It takes time for taste to actually register. So, even that will be a very strong argument for consciousness. It's not a flow of consciousness. It's moments of consciousness, one after the other. And of course, the simile of a movie, the celluloid film, is a wonderful way of understanding this. So what appears to be continuous is just a number of images flashing up one after the other so fast it gives the illusion of continuity. And anyway, the last question from Hawaii. Is it possible to experience a nimitta while still having feelings of the body? And does a nimitta have to be a solid color. Okay, for those of you who don't know the nimittas, I very rarely talk about nimittas on this class. I usually talk about those on the meditation retreats where people have more of an opportunity to have these arise. Generally speaking, as I mentioned in the beginning, one of the ideas of this meditation is to subdue the five senses of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and physical touch, till they get so calm they disappear. And then the last sense, the sixth sense of mind, mental consciousness, is what arises then, because everything else has been subdued. For most ordinary people in ordinary life, the five senses are so dominant, we spend so much time seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and dealing with those perceptions, that you know, the actual mind consciousness is just very, very weak. And in meditation, the five external senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, are subdued. And then that means the mind consciousness can actually become apparent. And the way it is usually perceived by human beings is this beautiful light, called the nimitta. As I mentioned, everybody, even if you're not a Buddhist, will one day see a nimitta when you die. Near-death experiences, people float outside of the body, and they go towards the light. That light is what happens when the five senses stop in death, or close to death, and that's the only sense left. And that's how people usually see it. So this is actually what the nimitta is. It's a light which appears in the mind when your five senses either stop, or more accurately, when they get very weak. So you don't have to totally stop. You can still hear, maybe still feel a bit of the body, but it's a very weak physical sensation of touch. It's sort of like sometimes people hear the sounds, but they're like 100 miles away. They can still hear, but it's not as strong a sensory impression as before. And that means a beautiful light can come up into the mind. That's what we mean by nimitta. Obviously, if you're going to be a strong nimitta, then the five senses are just so weak you can hardly hear them or feel the body at all. The sound is the last of those five senses to disappear. That is the one which is the most difficult to get rid of. One of the reasons why people have alarm clocks to wake them up, because it's the sound really gets in there. And the reason for that is just basically we've evolved to have sound as our last line of defense. In nighttime when it's dark, we hear the tiger approaching. Don't see it. So the sound is actually that thing which wakes us up in the morning. And it's also the thing which is the last to disappear, you know, before we really get into the world of the mind. So yeah, you can hear a few sounds and feelings of the body, and nimitta can still be there, but it will be weak and unstable until the other five senses totally vanish. And can it be a solid color? Sometimes that when it first comes up, it can be just pastel, it can be just, what I think you mean here, just translucent, seeing through it. But as the nimitta gets stronger and stronger, it will just become solid, brilliant. Usually the images which have the really big ones, the ones which are really going to take you very deep, very solid, incredibly brilliant, very blissful, those are the ones which eventually we develop. So it doesn't matter, they can start whatever they like. But eventually it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Okay, hopefully those answer some of the questions from overseas. Any questions from here? Really? Maybe because it's hot and you want to go home. The beach, the pool is beckoning you. You can even see it now, you can smell the salt. Whatever you're going to do this evening. Yes, you.
Thanks, Ajahn. Just following on from that question about the nimitta, I just wonder whether, if you feel that the senses do disappear, am I asleep or how do you tell whether you're asleep or...
Okay, one of the best ways, it's a very difficult question, thank you for asking it, it's a very usually simple answer, is, you know, sometimes you're meditating, get very, very still, and, you know, don't see a beautiful nimitta, but, you know, you feel you can't hear anything or hear anything. But the way you really know is how you feel afterwards. You know, if you've been asleep, you feel quite dull afterwards. If you've been peaceful still, not really asleep, but just being very settled and still, you'll notice that you've got energy and happiness. Sleep makes you dull, but the stillness makes you alive. So one of the best ways is just know how you feel afterwards. Obviously, if you're not that aware of whether you are awake or asleep, it's not the best state, but you weren't being asleep if you've got energy afterwards. And so after a while, the awareness gets so strong. Now you're still, but the awareness is growing, until you can be aware of that state. The simile I usually give is like you're in your house, and you go out into the garden at night time. There's no lights in the garden. So maybe a better simile would be like in a monastery, out in the bush. You go out from your hut into the darkness. At first you can't see anything. You're going from the lit room into the darkness, but it takes a while before your pupils of your eyes dilate, and so it allows more light to come in, so you can start to see the shapes of trees and paths and maybe buildings in the darkness. It takes a while for the eyes to accommodate the more subtle images. And sometimes that's what happens in meditation. You know, you're sort of sitting down, closing your eyes, it's reasonably quiet, the five senses are sort of shutting down. It's more subtle impact on the senses, and it takes a while for the mindfulness to get strong enough to know them. At first, it's like out in the darkness, there's nothing there, you can't see anything. If you wait a while, you start to see the silhouettes of trees and, you know, the path and other stuff out in the forest in the darkness. You get your night vision. Same way you get your subtle vision in meditation. The mindfulness gets stronger and can understand what's going on. Okay, 4:15 now. So it's time for me to retire. So let's pay respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. And for those of you who come to the Sutta class tomorrow afternoon, there is a Sutta class tomorrow afternoon. And it's going to be Sutta number 29 of the Digha Nikaya, the Pasadika Sutta. It's a bit long, but it's a beautiful sutta, one of my favorites, and I'm going to give that a try tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. The Digha Nikaya. That's the long discourses of the Buddha. It is one of the long discourses, but it's not one of the long discourses. It's one of the short long discourses. So it's okay.